Today on All Songs Considered, something a little different. A listening party. We'll play a minute or so of a song, and you get to rate it. I'm Bob Boylan with All Songs Considered. We threw this listening party in the Red Room of Cafe 939 in Boston last week. The audience was, in large part, students from the Berklee College of Music, where Stephen Thompson and I were invited to visit. Some in the audience were fans of the show. I had some music playing on my computer while the audience of 100-plus took their seats. They all had cards numbered 1 through 10 to rate the songs and to spark a conversation. And there's some interesting conversations today. As we begin, the music of St. Vincent was randomly playing over the speakers in the cafe. A quick little technical note before we start. Sometimes the music continues a little longer than I thought it was going, so I forget to stop the music or something, and maybe even another song would start playing in the background while the conversation was happening. That didn't happen in the house, but on the recording. Anyway, on to the party.
That's pretty funny. Hi, everybody. Former dropout from Berklee is playing in the background as I say hello. St. Vincent. That's great. That's perfect timing. Random. I love random. Introduce James Reed from the Boston Globe. Hello, Amelia Mason.
Hello.
Hello from the Artery at WBUR. Susan Rogers, Berklee faculty. Engineer, I mean, maybe you all know this, she's an engineer, music cognition expert. I used to work with Prince, David Byrne, lots of stuff. Let's play music. And then there's, I always forget about Stephen Thompson. Without purpose. Well, Stephen's not without purpose. Although sometimes he aimlessly wanders around NPR.
No, you'd be surprised. I'm largely without purpose.
Stephen will go around the room. If you particularly want to say something about a song, just wave your card or your hand or something. Do something. Here we go. First song. Oh, and I don't tell you what they are.
Been shook down again. Turn away and turn around with nobody to call my own in this mean old world alone. Many, many nights I cried. Somebody was on my side. Down in my soul I knew some way I'd get through. Looking back now I see somebody was a watching over me.
Somebody was a watching. Somebody was. Yeah, let's put the cards up.
I've been locked.
Ooh, there's three fives in a row. They're brothers or sisters or something. Sixes, eights, tens, fives. Lots of fives. The panel.
All right.
The panel loves. Okay, so first of all, Stephen, there are three people in a row who thought this
was a five.
And this, by the way, is Pop Staples. Does anybody know who Pop Staples is? Raise your hand. The people who Susan Rogers picked this song. The three people who picked five, right in the middle there.
Yeah, I got them.
Do you? I want you to directly answer before Stephen gets to you, because he's going to get to you. Raise your hand if you knew who this was. Did you know who it was? Okay, so no hands up. And do you know who Pop Staples is? Okay.
It's okay. We're all friends.
Fine. Right. I'm just curious. There we go.
My favorite, actually, number that I saw held up was somebody fairly early in the song. I think it was you. Held up a seven, realized you were the only person holding up a number, and went...
So, three fives, and then Susan Rogers is going to talk a little about... Pops.
About why you're wrong for giving it a five. All right. So who among you who gave it a five would who among you would like to talk about the five that you gave the song wrongly?
Somebody was watching. I don't know, it's just not something that I would seek out. It's not really the type of music that I listen to. That's it.
Did you like anything about it?
I mean, it was kind of groovy, and I felt like if I saw it live, I would like it more.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pop Staples has been dead a little bit long, but otherwise we may be able to work something out. Susan Rogers, tell us about Pop Staples.
The Staples Singers, they had a lot of hits in the 60s, and Pops was the matriarch.
Pops well, was the mom. Secret is out, Pops.
So Pops was the patriarch of this very musical family, same time as the Jacksons, but funkier. And his daughter Mavis became the most famous of his children. Anyway, Jeff Tweedy from Wilco just recently produced this record. It was the last record of Pop's life, and it was released posthumously. He passed away before it came out. The reason I like it, I'm going to share a secret now. It actually has more to do with the track than it does with the song. As a song, I think a standard for a good song is melody, and the chord changes, and the lyrics. And this is all okay. It's good. I think it's good. That's why I gave it an 8. But the track is funky. I like that track. So that's why I'm fond of it.
And Mavis held on to this music for 15 years before she handed it over, 14 years maybe, she handed it over to Jeff Tweedy of Wilco. She finally found it time to do something with it. And they added some music to it. Somebody Was Watching is the name of the song, Pop Staples.
And the album is called Don't Lose This, which I think is kind of a beautiful name for what had been a lost recording.
Which is what Pop said to Mavis, literally.
Yeah. He said to his daughter, don't lose this. Yeah. It's kind of beautiful.
So now do you like it more? How you feel about it?
Yeah, that's right. I see a 10 going up now. Like, for sentiment, I give it a 10.
Oh, what should I play next? Ready?
Welcome to my earth. It's a crying shame. We have built a foolish world, busy fighting, cruelly lying and denying. My ghosts are not. Now you can feel my heart.
Mostly positive.
Yeah, lots of eights.
I am gonna start. I'm gonna be a non-lazy man, and I'm gonna walk all the way back to where I see a 10. You know who this is?
Okay.
Is that why?
I was listening to them on the way over here.
Why don't you tell everybody who this is?
Ibai. They're two twin sisters from Paris, and they're amazing. That song's called Ghost, right?
That song's called Ghost. Yep.
Yeah. Gosh,
Ibei is I-B-E-Y-I. Yeah. Cuban roots.
Yeah. So good. The whole album is good. It's like not just one song, but you have to listen to the entire album. It's more of like an experience. They're not a single song kind of group.
And James Reid picked this. Yeah. What do you love about this thing?
I feel so offended. I saw a 6 and I thought it's not even my song. And I'm like,
right? Imagine
imagine if that's actually me singing. You know, so cruel. This song is tough to hear, I think, a minute of, because it's got a lot of layers, like you were saying about the record. The whole record has a real kind of vibe. But if we listen a little bit longer, you know, what's great is that it sort of starts out in this very traditional kind of R&B kind of vibe, and then you get like these little sibling harmonies, but then at the end it kind of cracks wide open and it's got these great sort of very joyous kind of moments.
Should we play a little bit more of what's...
Well, since I made a case, sure.
Yeah. Just fade in a little bit, Oscar. I think I'm rolling now. There we go. This is
ain't nothing without love.
You want to do harmony with this?
Without love.
You can write that.
We ain't nothing without love.
They're French-Cuban.
Yeah, their dad was a member of Buena Vista Social Club. He's a real famous percussionist named Anja Diaz. And they're young. I mean, I think they're like 19 years old. They're twin sisters. They sing in English and French and Yoruba, which is more sort of Cuban, Afro-Cuban heritage. But you see what I mean about the song? Like, it's like you hear it and it's like, oh, it's really pleasant, it's pretty. And then you get those really sort of, you know, that sort of the exalting kind of choruses. And I know.
Have you got to see them live yet?
I have not.
Oh,
I haven't
wait.
Come here yet.
Yeah, wait. Yeah. A real treat.
They've actually asked me to do harmony. So.
I am going to come back to Boston for that.
Okay, all right.
Just that moment.
I'm going to leave Boston.
They've already turned your mic off. He has a meter that like detects negativity.
Sass meter?
Sass meter, yes. Here we go. Ready? New cut.
Wow.
3-4-2-2-2.
Wow.
Six,
all right.
Six. Okay,
I'm gonna start working my way around to the other side of the room here.
There's one. Let's.
I feel like there's a 10 right next to a 2, so that once I walk
there
over,
there are two 10s
here,
together right there. Were they the ones who did the fives? Too?
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting.
So
all
let's talk about how
fives.
This. Why you feel this is twice as good as Pop Staples? Actually, let's actually have you talk about what you love about the song.
Well, the first thing that caught my attention that I really liked were the vocals. It really reminded me of kind of like a Kathleen Hanna, that high-pitched girl shouting, and I really love that. So, and I love the drums, too.
Do you know who it is?
I don't think so.
Anybody in the room? No. Good. So,
is it Gorilla Toss?
Yes.
Who said that? Yes. Amelia picked this. You want to tell us a little about Gorilla Toss before somebody tells you why it was a 1?
I picked this song for its polarizing qualities.
Yeah, we're going to talk to a 2 next.
And also, it is a Boston band. And sometimes I don't want to hear nice music. I just like want it to be weird. And it's cool.
Even if you're alone, not to offend other people, just for your own self? Because polarizing means there's got to be somebody else besides you.
Yeah, I like to blast it out my window to make people mad.
It's like giving a finger out your window.
It's how I wake up every morning. But
it's your best friend's ringtone.
Yeah, I mean it's nice because they do a lot of interesting rhythmic things. It's very syncopated, and I like to hear, like, if you hear this, if you listen to the song, like, I think it's a little bit alienating at first, and then if you listen a few times, like any of their songs, you'll start to notice the way they mesh patterns together. It's kind of like a music nerd pleasure that I get out of it. I know that people see them live and they're like, it's very visceral and like it's a live experience and they're great at that, but they do these cool things with rhythm where they just have this, like they had this one groove at the beginning that comes back a few times, and then there's like this other weird syncopated part that like actually fits with it in a really surprising way. And then there's like, of course, sort of dissonance happening in there, and the vocals are like, I have no idea what she's singing, but she's like really emphatic, and I like totally believe her.
The song is called Billy Blood Idol, so maybe she's talking about Billy Idol of Generation X. But
yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, right.
It's a mystery to me.
And do you know anything about Gorilla Toss that you can share?
I think, I think they're based in JP. They're like from around here. They play around a lot. They are one of the bands that like when I'm interviewing Boston bands, like that everyone, and when I ask like, what's your favorite band around here? Like this one comes up. It's like everyone loves them. I think they might be affiliated with New England Conservatory, but actually don't quote me on that.
Somebody's nodding emphatically.
Sometimes
so
they're
we've
naked.
Confirmed, yes.
Someone's naked a lot, I
That's
think.
That's the way NPR confirms.
I think they don't sound like other Boston bands. Like, they literally just sound like themselves. And that's, we have a great underground kind of, like, rock scene, but it's a lot of, like, shaggy kind of garage rock a lot, and it feels a little bit, it gets a little old, and then you're like, holy crap, like, what is this? Like, you don't want me to like this, so I'm gonna like it.
Can I say something about that, though? I really like what Gorilla Toss is trying to do.
Yeah.
And I gave that a 3, but not for the record. I think the record is a 9 on a 10 scale. I think the song is a 3 on a 10 scale, because there's not much of a song there. You wouldn't learn the chord changes.
It's not supposed to be a song.
I thought, yeah, it's all songs considered. Isn't that what we're doing? We're considering
technicality,
the song.
Technicality.
But if we were considering the records, I think it's
Bob,
a great
we
record.
Got him fighting. We can go home now.
Yeah. I didn't pick it yet for its form, I guess.
So what I'm saying is what I think they're trying to do, that noise pop, so needs to happen. We need pop music that incorporates noise and chaos. And as soon as someone does that, I think it's going to be fantastic. And I can feel their attempts.
Yeah.
And it's so close.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say it was fully realized yet, but I would argue that, like, compared to other bands that are doing things like I hear a lot of stuff that is like sort of repetitive in that way,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like there's a little more melodically or harmonically happening with them than are
cool.
there in a lot of things that are like that.
They are cool,
which is nice, I guess. Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna play something else, unless anybody wants to say something about Gorilla Toss or Toss a Gorilla. Here we go.
Yeah.
Ready?
Grew up in a city where it's hard to be heard, and nothing really has much meaning. Pete had his heart broke once, he never fixed it. Sits there in his chest with his arms crossed, screwing. Becky had her heart broke twice, she won't risk it again. She don't wanna see her heart get ruined. And now she's on her way to wash up and take the orders for spaghetti at Giuseppe's, the cafe on the corner. She did the night shift too, and Matthew's at the sauna. She's putting herself through uni, it's hard work. But will it be this way forever? These are lonely days.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
This has been such a careful crowd.
Yeah.
But I see a couple of ones.
Oh.
And I, you know, we've been steering positive, but I'm going to ask somebody about this one. Would you like to talk about why you give this song a 1? You didn't realize I was standing right here. I'm sorry.
Never would have done that.
All right.
There was nothing I liked about it.
Yeah.
I love you.
The accent was a little harsh. And it kind of made my ears just do like that. Kind of like the Boston accent does a little bit.
Oh.
I'm not trying to offend anyone.
I'm just going to say, I don't know if this is the
she
right
loved
room.
You and then she didn't love you anymore.
It's a roller coaster ride of emotions.
Nobody look at her face.
The artist is Kate Tempest. She's a 29-year-old poet, playwright, and rapper. The artist at South by Southwest this year that I saw that I love more than any other artist I saw this year. I've never seen, well, I can't say I've never seen, but she is one performer that looks every single soul in the eye, talks about the positive forces in life, why we should care about each other, and she blows my mind. And with the part in the song that is the turn for me, which she says we could be this way forever, just the melody, what happens in the song after you just think it's going to be beat and talk, and then that thing happens, and it solidifies everything she says. It is this foundation for her words. The beat is not just there to be behind her music. I think for me, a lot of spoken wordy hip-hop music, the melody doesn't ever come through, and I'm just, because of when I was born, melody means everything to me. And so I really love that. There's nothing wrong with liking only beat music, but for me, it's really important to have some sense of melody. So she blows my mind, Kate Tempest.
It's funny that you mentioned the accent, because my first thought was like, this song should get us all like a stamp on our passport to London. It is so pronounced. But I think that's interesting. I love it whenever you can tell where an artist is from. You know, I feel like one of the big storylines around Courtney Barnett this year is that she's Australian. I mean, she sings those songs, it sounds like she's totally Australian. And I love that. To me, it gives me, sort of makes me feel closer to the artist, knows where he or she is coming from. It makes me want to know what part of London she's from, you know what I mean? But so I didn't find it harsh, but I found it very, you know, kind of interesting.
It's funny, there's a long time in music where, especially British Invasion, if you think about the 60s and stuff, you really couldn't tell by hearing the singing that any of the groups, and just take, you know, I Want to Hold Your Hand or something, that they were British at all. And it wasn't that they were trying to hide it and make it big in America, so they didn't want to sound British, but I think they just grew up on American rock and roll and heard American rock and roll singers, and that's the way you sang rock and roll. It was without accent, and I mean, that's my theory, but I digress. Anybody else like this song?
Is there anybody who really, really liked it a lot and had no idea who it was?
Yeah, there's a couple.
I love the genre, so I love the hip-hop, spoken word kind of thing. The beat, her accent, the words. I'll say the opposite of the one. I really did love everything about it. And I turned to her, and she knew it was because she saw it South by 2, and she immediately said that she's going to be in Boston next month. So I will try my best to be going to that show.
Of all the people coming to my desk in the next handful of months, she's the one I'm most excited about.
Yeah, I want to know how you got into that South by Southwest show.
Oh, my God, right?
I was not able to.
I made sure of that.
Yes, that's right. There was a sign at the door. I was like, what's that? That's my face.
Are we ready for something else or anybody else? Okay, here we go. Here we go. Ready. Twos, tens, three.
Wow.
This is the lowest rated.
Yeah.
But then again, there's a number of tens. So.
4, 6, 8.
I feel like this is going to break down in whether you like puns. Do you like puns? Do you like the song?
Do you like gravy?
Or maybe it's about gravy.
Yeah. Gravy.
There's literal. Tens.
What do you want to do, Stephen? I have to explain something that Stephen and I know from having done this before. We each of us have picked a handful of songs for you, right? when my song, Hey Tempest song, played, and you hold up threes, they're like stabbing wounds, right?
Yeah. And everyone.
I just want to thank everybody for, Stephen picked that song, for all the ones that.
Stephen, you're so cheesy.
Yeah, everyone is like a knife in my heart. Aww. No, I first of all,
it is.
It's Casey Musgraves.
Yeah, it is.
Who is fantastic. It's the first song from her new record, which is as yet unreleased. What I love, and we'll talk to people who hate the song in a second. What I love about Casey Musgraves is she is our foremost practitioner of the Shut Your Judgy Pie Hole anthem. And I think we in America need a foremost practitioner of the Shut Your Judgy Pie Hole anthem. She also occasionally strays into Mind Your Nosy Beeswax. I think Casey Musgraves is great, but let's talk to some of the people who are wrong.
Do you want me to hold the microphone?
You were holding up a one.
So nothing against her. I just hate country and anything with a banjo. I can't do banjos.
I'm going to come to bat for Steven on this one because banjos are the best.
I'm not a huge country
fan. But that one
fan.
Was kind of a lame banjo. Yeah.
Hank Williams?
I mean, and country? It just made me want a biscuit and gravy. I got hungry.
I'm sorry.
That's a good thing.
So... I'm not a huge fan of country music either. I mean, I love Hank Williams and stuff, but most country music anymore, I don't. I have fun listening to her words. I wouldn't sit around my house and listen to Casey Musgraves, but when Stephen puts this on or put it on a show, I don't know. She's funny, you know, and she has something to say, and just when you think you know the next word, it isn't that. It's much more clever. So I'll just go to bat for Casey in that way.
I also, I'm going to just keep talking about how much I love it.
But there are probably 70 people who gave him one, Stephen.
I just think I love it when singers and songwriters and musicians come at you with a philosophy. Like, I just think an overarching philosophy of a musician is a really interesting thing. Like, it's like when you're a writer and people say, you have a voice. And I think that having a songwriting voice that is coming from a consistent and interesting perspective, I think she writes from a perspective. Like when I hear her songs, like I know what they're about. I know where she's coming from. I think she's really interesting and great. And that's fine if you give
so, you know. There's a hand up there, Stephen. Some other people want to talk too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry. No. I would like to.
I'm teasing you.
So I give this song a 9 because let's not just throw out tens. But what I love. What I love about country and bluegrass and all that, you don't have to think about the lyrics. You don't have to think. It just makes you feel. And I just feel happy listening to that. I'm like, want to have a beer and hang out with my friends.
I want to have a beer, too.
Put on some flip flops. Yeah, why don't there beer here?
John Congleton's a producer. He actually produced the St. Vincent record that came on when we walked up on stage and made me think of something he said to me and to Robin Hilton when we were doing a show one day. We played a piece of music, and as a producer, he gets tons of things sent to him that he does or doesn't like. And when he gets something that he doesn't like, he thinks of it as his own failure, which I thought was a really interesting way to look at it. Like, there's lots of kinds of music that it goes on, and right away I go off, and you did that with country. But I like John's challenge to oneself to say, maybe this is a good artist and they have a good thing to say and a good message and I'm just not capable or I have a weakness or something. And it's good to try to like listen to stuff that you don't normally listen to because it's really easy, especially in this day and age, to listen to simply what you want to hear or the skip button to anything you don't. But next time a song comes on, which may be the next song we play, comes on and you don't like it, listen to the whole thing sometime. And anybody else on Casey or on that thought?
Yeah,
on the thought of failure as a listener.
All right. There's a fervent hand up, so I'm gonna
I think that when I was hearing you talk about kind of an artist having a perspective or a voice that's really clear, to me, I'm a songwriter, so maybe it's coming from that kind of I don't know, those muscles that I've built in my brain that when you are listening to country or folk music, there's a batch of subjects that kind of go along with it. Biscuits and gravy, picket fences, trucks, things like that. And at times, I guess I swerve away. And it's actually nice to hear you say that, because it is challenging to actually listen further and try and actually get the message that's coming across, and not just kind of the face value of all the words she's saying. But when people use kind of these, they almost pigeonhole the genre with like a certain kind of lyrical content, like saying this is folk music, so we're going to talk about pickup trucks, etc., and use banjos and upright basses and things. I feel like I actually drive away from it because I don't feel like they're working very hard. I'm like, oh, put something together that actually is compelling to me, and don't just write another country song that talks about X, Y, and Z. And there's a lot of artists where I feel like they do use, you know, a traditional bluegrass setup, but they're actually talking about, like, the Punch Brothers, for instance, or, you know, bands that maybe cross things over or are just using those instruments because it's what they play, not because it's something to just kind of put on repeat again.
I'm going
to
say that I love your point, and it's really true, but I'm going to say that I think about all the genres of music that I like and listen to and all the ones I don't, and they all do it. Do you know what I mean? And I think that the music we like, we give that a pass, or we just understand that, that's part of the form. You know, in rock music, they're going to talk about, you know, their love or their whatever. But when you're into that music, you get to the next level. You get right past that. Hip-hop, you know the words that are often spoken in that music. But for people who really love that music, they can look right past that and look deeper inside of it, and there's more meaning than that. But it is an easy thing to say, oh, it's just like looking somebody what somebody's wearing, right? And you just can be dismissive of a person for this or
yeah,
you know, right? But once you get to know the person, then it's different. There's always something underneath. So
I would argue that Casey's strength is that she subverts those tropes.
Right.
And that's when she does her best work, she is screwing around with them.
Actually, you raised your hand. You had a point. Give me so I heard what you say, and I found it interesting two things. One, the fact that sometimes it's difficult to hear new things because you just might want to skip to go to something that you know. And the other thing that you have just talked about, the style that sometimes you're expecting to hear something about that. But what happened to me with this song was, even though it's country and I'm hearing and trying to hear country, I'm also trying to hear the actual artist, like something about them, mm-hmm. or her voice or his voice. But for example, another thing was with Ghost. In Ghost, it was the other half. It was too much material, too much constantly. Even though I'm trying to look for something that interests me, that new. I'm looking for this. This is new. In Ghost, it was too much. I would have done like 10 songs with only one song that they did. But in this one, I was still looking for something that hooked me with the...
Speaking of style, and ready for the next one?
Yes.
Here we go.
I got a bone up here. I don't want you monkey mouth motherfucker sitting in my throne again. I'm mad, but I ain't stressing. True friends, one question. Bitch, where you and I was walking? Now I run a game, got the whole world talking. King Kunta, everybody wanna cut the legs off him. Kunta, black man taking no losses.
Oh, yeah.
Bitch, where you and I was walking? Now I run a game, got the whole world talking. King Kunta, everybody wanna cut the legs off him. When you got the yams?
What's the yams?
The yam is the power that be. You can smell it when I'm walking down the street.
Oh, yes, we can. Oh, yes, we can.
I can dig rapping. But a rapper with a ghost rider, what the fuck happened?
Oh no!
I swore I wouldn't
tell.
But most of y'all sharing bars like you got the bottle bunk in a two-man sale.
A two-man sale.
Something's in the water. And if I got a brown nose for some gold, then I'd rather be a bum than a motherfucking ball.
Oh yeah!
Bitch, where you and I was walking? Now I run a game, got the whole world talking. King Kunta, everybody wanna cut the legs off. King Kunta.
All right, so
I'm gonna, those numbers.
Bob, do you want to start out by saying who it is?
Well, I think that one is Kendrick Lamar. I think that one is probably a known and known, right? I mean, probably the most known song we may play this evening. Got a lot of love here. Anybody want to talk about the first time they heard that song? There's a so yeah. I saw first 10 up.
This 10 shot up about half a second into the song, so we'll start there. I was gonna start with the 10 that was bouncing the entire time the song was playing, but we'll start with you.
Huge fan of this song. The thing that I mean, I'm a huge Kendrick Lamar fan in general, but this song especially, it has I think 3 key changes in it, which is really unique for a hip hop song, I think. And that's just, I think, very musically ambitious for Kendrick Lamar to kind of step up his game in terms of being more than, I mean, he's always tried to be ambitious, but I think that's really impressive. And also just the lyrics, I read on Genius that it's some sort of oxymoron for being King Tuta is a slave and he had his legs cut off because he chose that over getting his female
castration.
Yeah, over castration. And it's kind of like he's a king and a slave, so it's you can't be both at once. And that's how he feels. That's how Kendrick feels, which is kind of cool.
It's based on the character in Alex Haley's Roots, Kunta Kinte.
Brief anecdote. I took a group of students in a large van to New York City on Friday. So I'm driving, and I wanted to play some music, so I put on the Kendrick Lamar record. It was on my phone. And I assumed, you know, all the kids are going to love it, right? Because they're all Berkeley kids. So I'm on the seat, and I'm just driving and dancing. And after about song 3, the kid who's riding shotgun turns to me, and he goes, "You like this?" I said, "Yeah, I do." And I said, "You want me to take it off and put something else on?" He goes, no, I should learn to like it." And I said, no, I don't want to torture you. Let's go ahead and take it off. If you've got something, put it on." He put on Kacey Musgrave. And immediately, 2 voices from the back of the van went, "Yeah!" I learned an important lesson that day.
Wow. Yeah. That's all right. Yeah. I'm going to play 2 things in a row, and we're just going to rate them and not even talk about them. Unless somebody really wants to. So I'm just curious about this song and how people will like it or not, given what many of you do in your lives.
I'm waiting for an escape to unfold in my favor. Sound asleep. I'm waiting for a rare luck to sow its seed. I am the great headless blank, slowly losing shape, racing all alone. And I'm waiting for another soul to hear my
like this more than I thought. And I'm imagining, can I see your number? Oh, I thought your brain would hurt from this because there are so many songs inside of this song. I was thinking of you as it was playing, yeah? It's a group. I'm not going to talk much about this unless you want to, because it's kind of an interesting song. Group is called Make Under, which is the opposite of makeover, which is making you look as natural as possible as opposed to looking made up. Make Under, they're from Oakland. They sound a whole lot like the Dirty Projectors, who I love, right? I thought it was. Anybody want to say anything about this?
I was with you. I thought maybe there were 2 songs at once happening.
But you gave it a 7-ish? Yeah.
I really like when the beat came in because it was not the beat I expected. And I was like, yeah.
That's great. I'm going to play this real quick. Oops. No, now this real quick. Sorry, Oscar. It's John Cage.
Thank you.
we can hold up numbers. It pretty much is this beautiful or by it. Wow, look at that. Wow. Oh, I love this. Look, hang on. I got to take a picture of this. I'm going to send it to him. Hold, keep those numbers up. So, I'm going to send this to Nils Fromm. Do you guys
I was
going to
say, this
Nils
sounds
Fromm?
Like Nils Fromm, but I do see one very dubious three.
Okay. Should we move on? Do you want to talk about Nils Fromm? Beautiful,
Nils
beautiful.
Fromm.
Nils Fromm's a beautiful, beautiful piano player. His first record that I ever heard, he made this record where, like, he didn't want to disturb his neighbors, so he played, like, as quietly as possible. And he mic'd everything, like hyper-mic'd everything, super close. So you heard every single gear and thing, everything that made noise inside of a piano that you'd never even imagine made noise unless you stuck a mic and cranked it really loud up. And it was one of the most beautiful records I ever heard. Nils Fromm, F-R-A-H-M. And we'll play something else. Let's play. Ready? And the winner and the holder of the 10.
I'm going to walk James out Reed. Quietly now.
To that song as it plays.
Yeah, I think this is an absolute, this is my idea of a perfect pop song. This is old. This is from 1964. So if anybody thought this was 2015, like, you know, it's old. I love everything about it. I love the way she sings. I love
she is?
Jackie DeShannon. Jackie DeShannon is famous for the two worst songs in her catalog. Put a Little Love in Your Heart.
Thank you.
And, thank you. And What the World Needs Now is Love.
Oh, my God.
True.
I can't ever tell
song.
You what that did, how many times I turned off the radio.
And this song right. redeems it, right? The song redeems her. It's the way she's singing. It's the way it's like she's shouting. I actually interviewed her once, and I think that song is like a bridge between girl group pop, which was certainly of, you know, happening in 1964, and harder rock for females. I mean, that I wouldn't be surprised if Patti Smith loved that song. Uh-huh. You know, the way she's singing, and then you have the jangle of the guitar. You have that really honeyed Phil Spector wall of sound. And Jing, I just think it's fantastic. I listen to it at least once a week.
Wow. I was thinking nightly and you dance.
I'm actually dancing under this table. Yes. Yeah.
Anyway. We'll go out on it and you'll be dancing. Anybody out there? Steven?
Yeah.
See anything?
I mean, I saw a two.
Didn't the Searchers have the hit, though? I mean,
they had the hit. Yeah. She wrote it.
I kind of feel like I have to edit that because I was convinced that it was new. And so I was like, this
nice.
Is like,
bring it in just a little bit, Oscar. I'm going to hit the button.
I'm also
here.
A guitar player, too. So I've heard. I mean, this sounds great for 1964. Yeah. For 2015, I'm like, I've heard so many people play a 12-string electric like this. Come on.
Right.
Do something else new. And so, you know, it's on me.
This was a prototype.
Totally my mistake.
Yeah.
Like, you can, like, in a historical context, totally different thing.
Yeah,
it's a much different thing. It's a much better record than I was thinking it was. Oops.
But I think that's an interesting point. And Bob and I have been talking about that a lot in recent days. Is Bob likes to play these completely blind and just see, like, with fresh ears, no context at all, is it actually a good song? But I think when you don't have parentheses 1964. It is a completely different experience.
One more thing, too, is also, I was also hearing it in terms of the production of it. Mm. And so many things that are coming out now, like the Adele record that, you know, put her on the map. I had a really hard time with that when I heard it because I was like, it's like they're trying to make it sound old. And to me, that sounded artificial because I sell a lot of that gear, too, as well. Like, it's part of how I make my living. So you see a lot of people asking, how can it sound like this? And it's like, can you... again, try something else. But again, 50 years later, it's a different thing. So,
may I speak, just coming from the field of psychology, we know that human beings prefer their stimuli to strike the perfect blend between complexity and simplicity. So if it's the simplest music of all is children's music, and we don't listen to it because it's for children, it's too simple and predictable for us. And the most complex music of all is, of course, free-form jazz, because they're aiming to be totally unpredictable. No one buys that either. The music that is, you know, because everything regresses toward the mean, the music that most people buy, popular music, has struck the perfect balance between simplicity and complexity. There are recognizable elements in it. It's simple enough. We recognize it. But it needs some complexity, some character of newness about it. But the thing about it, to speak to your point, is that wave is constantly moving forward with culture and with society. So if Buddy Holly came out today, he'd be on the left side of that bell curve. The music would be way too simple for us. We've heard all that before. In fact, we heard it 50, 60 years ago. The music that we listen to, like Gorilla Toss, the stuff that is innovative is a little bit too complex for some people, but trends are moving in that direction as we roll forward as
a society. So would you say that Buddy Holly, when people first heard Buddy Holly, they would think that there was a complexity and a simplicity because they had never heard anything like that before?
It was brand new. That's right. That was on the right side of the bell curve. It was on the new side, the complex side, but that wave is constantly moving forward. And another great quote from a scientist whom I wish I could remember his name, but he said, the human mind treats a new idea the way the human body treats a new protein. We reject it. A brand new idea, initially it's like, I don't like it.
Again, a bell curve.
And it kind of takes a little minute to internalize these new things and go, I think I do like it.
But the weird thing about that is, like, if you listen to, like, top 40 now, like, harmonically speaking and, like, melodically speaking, it's not actually more complex.
Let me add something to that. The complexity doesn't have to be in the stimulus itself. The complexity doesn't have to be in the music. Sometimes the complexity is in the artifacts around the music. Lady Gaga's music is not all that complex. She's complex. She wore a dress made out of meat. She wears shoes that are this high. So because music and vision, the visual elements, how the artist looks and the videos and all that go together, you almost can't separate the two. We often regard music according to other factors, outside factors, what the artist looks like, if they have a great video, what their position is in society, things like that.
See, this explains why when Whoomp There It Is came out in the 90s. I found it just bafflingly complex. And I've only now, like 20 years later, come to fully appreciate it.
It did bring a lot of minds to a complete halt.
I would argue it's newness, not complexity.
And I'm imagining a room full of four-year-olds listening to free jazz. So, we'll go with that. Here we go.
Facts and figures.
Stephen will hand out the tissues.
I'm using them all up.
But
we all sing.
I love it when you read to me and you can read me anything. Music in it.
You can hold numbers up though.
In fact, that's where music comes from. Some of it is just
Look at that. Some of it is just real. So, Amelia, you picked this one. You talk about it. Yeah.
Well, you asked us to pick one song that wasn't like new and that we thought was perfect. And I actually wouldn't say it's perfect because the last line I hate.
Hang on a minute. Here it comes.
You ought to give me wedding rings.
which is not the sentiment that I object to, but that he had to rhyme things, and so he said rings. And that doesn't make sense. But it's like a 9.9 for that.
He is.
And this is the Magnetic Fields of Stephen Merritt, and he's a great, great songwriter. And I think the reason I like it, it's super sappy, but his delivery, like there's something about when he sings that he sounds like a little sarcastic or like melancholy or like Eeyore-ish or like just, he isn't too sincere. Like it's very sincere, but he's not too sincere. And also his lyrics are brilliant. And actually it's so simple, like in terms of what's happening, like it's a simple song in chord-wise, I guess, if you're going to get technical, and then like it has a beautiful melody, and then he's doing this lovely little thing poetically where he has like a big idea and he's talking about love in the Book of Love, and then he gets really small and personal in the chorus. He also doesn't say directly that he's in love. Like writing a love song, it gets so predictable, you know, like it's always the same, and somehow it like strikes a deeper chord, so to speak. I think when you go at it sideways a little, where he's like, and I like it when you sing to me, which is like, ugh, but like not gross. And that is how I feel about that song.
What's the name of the song? It's called The Book of Love. It was on a record called 69 Love Songs, which was in fact three discs.
Three discs. 69 Love Songs. A lot of them are really weird and funny and strange and sad and crazy.
But that's not the only perfect song out of those
on that record.
True, I almost picked a different song.
Nothing actually. Matters When We're Dancing is one of my favorite songs
of all
time.
That's a good one, yeah.
And actually on his next record there's a song called It's Only Time that flattens me. I'm not even going to be able to talk about it.
You want to go around? A lot of people had lots to say.
Here.
In the back, I see boom, yeah.
I was going to say, so I try to be really open-minded about covers of songs and people finding entry points in whatever way they can. There's a Peter Gabriel cover of this song that makes me furious.
Oh, wow.
I can see that.
Furious.
Yeah.
He didn't get the humor of it. Like, I think his version, there's no humor.
Exactly. Yeah. It just, I feel like so much of what makes this song distinct is in the delivery. And in the fact that, exactly like you were saying, he's talking about these enormous emotions, but he's coming at everything sideways. And that Peter Gabriel cover comes at nothing sideways.
Right.
Yeah.
And it like makes me vibrate with rage, and I don't really have that experience very often. But I know plenty of people for whom that's their favorite version, because it's sort of like when you meet a song like this, you don't notice the disguise, you just notice the song craft that's there and the ideas that are being conveyed, and they're so classically terrific that you respond to it, and whatever form you hear it in first becomes your favorite.
Stephen, I mean, I think his voice is, would you say, an acquired taste? Is anybody?
I would say it's super weird.
Yeah. And yet it completely works. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You had something you wanted to add. Hold on one second.
So actually, I first heard a cover by the Airborne Toxic Event, and they played it at the Walt Disney World, whatever, the auditorium or whatever.
Right.
And he prefaces it by saying that it was a song that he played for his grandmother as she was on her deathbed. So it's interesting that I was introduced to the song in that way, and then hear it now of you guys talking about it in this way. That's what came to me because you started talking about the covers.
I was actually going to say that it was just kind of that, what you already said in a nutshell, but at the same time, talking about the context of the song and that, like, that fine line of, should I do this cover and how am I going to interpret that cover, you know? But I was going to say, at first I was like, oh, I have to wait. This is a song where I'm going to have to wait to know if I like it, kind of, you know what I mean? Because I really liked... I loved his voice. It kind of reminds you of, like, I don't know, I got that vibe, like Into the Wild, kind of sort of You're Camping or something. And that clever thing that I feel like maybe a lot of lyricists can vibe with is that contrast, like almost like simplicity and complexity, but it's more about that mixture of, like, kind of, I'm trying to say, like the chorus, Book of Love, like that could be a really cheesy song,
exactly.
You know, to me, I hear that title. But then, like, that cool, the cool verses did it for me, and then the tone and everything. That's just what I was, same thing, kind of. Yeah.
All the way in the back, Stephen White shirt is all I can see from here.
Yeah, I just wanted to elaborate on that kind of contrast. I'd actually never heard this song before, but
I know the Magnetic Fields, they have that song, Love is Like a Bottle of Gin, which I think kind of sums up the great duality about them, where you have, like, throughout all of the lyrics, these really cute kind of metaphors about love, but they're kind of perplexing because they also are metaphors about gin. But you don't find out it's gin until the very last line, which is almost like tongue-in-cheek, but there's a seriousness to it as well. In the same way, it's there musically, too, because the guitar sounds are so crystal clear and clean, and then his voice is like that, like, kind of Leonard Cohen gravel, and that, like, adds, like, the musical duality to the lyrics, and it fits together just, you know, really beautifully.
I had the privilege of, I used to do this thing called Project Song at NPR, where we would bring an artist in the studio first and lay down six pictures and six words. And I'd hand, in this case, Stephen Merritt, he had to pick one word and one photograph, and he had 2 days to write a song about it, and we documented that process. And just watching him work, first of all, everything he put together musically, and this would interest music students in particular, was upside down. So where you would, I don't know, when I make music, I often start with either melody or a beat. He would start with, like, the backward drone on the guitar, and he put it all, like, he hears it all in his head, and it's just a matter of execution, and it's really was quite a stunning thing to see.
I also liked about that the way we had to rent. Did we have to rent or did we obtain a bar?
I found a bar,
yeah,
a literal bar, because it was this concept that I really hadn't clearly thought through, but I wanted to create some sort of atmosphere that songwriters at least were comfortable in, because they were going to come for 2 days, and I wanted them to be comfortable. So I wrote to Stephen, and I said, so when you write a song, like, where do you go? He says, I go to a bar. And I just put out a note and found a bar and and put it in the middle of our studio.
At NPR, it was surprisingly not very difficult.
That's right. Let's do another classic. I kind of like doing these. This song, Big Hands, and so then I guess the others don't. From somebody who doesn't know the song, who wants to just be a small guinea pig for 30 seconds, yeah, there you go. I want you to guess the year. Let's start there.
Well, I would say probably like 64 or 65.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah. Is it the Kinks?
It is the Kinks.
Okay.
And and the song's called Waterloo Sunset. Stephen picked this one brilliantly, I might say, Stephen. And I know, it was nothing. What did you rate it, having never heard it?
I gave it a 9.
Uh-huh.
And I've been recently trying to go backwards in my listening, so I've been listening to a lot of the Birds lately. And so that kind of just put me all in that mindset of, wow, there was more than just the Beatles
right.
in the early 60s. So that was kind of, it's still a huge revelation to me, but yeah.
And did you like about it? I'm just curious.
It's definitely the riff-driven stuff that's trying to kind of interesting me more, especially in the writing that I'm trying to do here as a songwriter. You know, it definitely... it gave so many flavors of back then that I'm like hearing in music now, like Grizzly Bear and stuff like that.
There you go.
So it's definitely something where I'm getting more, trying to get those gears going.
As a lyricist and songwriter, are you writing words too?
Yeah. Yeah. So
the Stephen Merritt in this, I think, are two really good examples for people writing words, because although we didn't play the whole story of Terry and Julie and their sunset and stuff, the story's so great.
Right.
Anyway, I like that bit.
I usually like to write about biscuits and gravy in my songs.
Well played.
Anybody up on the panel?
I at first was like not into it, and then there were like high-pitched la-la-las, and I was like, yeah, okay.
It's funny. Some people, like, for my co-host Robin Hilton, he's really big. Like, give him a hand clap. Wow. Oh, my God, what a sucker he is for that. So if you want to write a song that Amelia really likes when you're working on this, you can play it for Amelia. High vocals, la-las. What else?
I like falsettos. Male falsetto.
Yes. Male falsetto.
Oh, yes, we do. Yeah. Yes, we do.
Well, she's got the deeper.
Yeah, adult male falsetto.
What is it, Susan?
Or even a female
Why?
Falsetto.
Okay,
oh, yeah.
But tell me what it is, because, I mean, I went to Iceland, right, and you would think everybody was Justin Vernon. It was remarkable.
It's not really a falsetto the way I was thinking. Like, not a whispery one.
No, we're talking, you know, Eddie Kendrick and the Temptations and, you know, just any man that can go from the chest voice up to the head.
Justin Timberlake.
Sure. There you go. If I may speak again as a psychologist, our voices signify sexual fitness. And humans are one of only four species on planet Earth where the male's voice is an octave lower than the female's. I mean, think about it. If you hear a dog bark or a horse whinny, you can't tell if it's a boy or girl dog or a boy or girl horse. It's the exact same voice. But human males have this Adam's apple, and the voice is an octave lower than the female. Our voices are different. So we evolved, so the women evolved to have a voice that's really soothing, because that says that we put babies to sleep, and, you know, well, you know what I mean. we'd be good mothers. We have a soothing
voice.
Why
I like Annie Lennox, because she sounds like a man.
And men evolved with this chest voice to say, I've got lung power, I've got power to spare. So when a man can go from that chest voice to the head voice, he's saying, I am all that. I've got the power in my lungs, and baby, I can go all the way up there. Right, right?
You're ruining it.
Hang on, if I may. I once had the rarest of privileges. I had a class, it was a makeup class, with production students, and it just so happened to be just women. The boys couldn't show up that day. So I had never in my whole career been in a room with five, including me, female record producers. And we got to do something that I'd never in my career ever done. The conversation went to that place that it often goes when it's just one gender. And I'd never done that. I'd heard about what it's like when all men are in a room together, but I'd never, you know, talking about records. But yeah, right, we've heard. But this was all women, and the conversation went to the place of, what do we find sexy in a male voice? And the young women and I just took turns playing those voices that we liked, and it was stunning. And I played some of my male falsetto voices that I liked, and the girls are going, yeah. And they played for me the stuff they liked. I'll never forget that day. It was pretty wonderful.
So with women going singing deep and low?
Yeah, I suppose maybe you guys, I don't know, a man would have to tell me. Yeah. What, do you like it?
I'll find one.
Okay.
I was just going to say, the new Alabama Shakes, she has a fantastic falsetto. Mm-hmm. She's a woman. She's a badass. I love it. I don't care what gender the falsetto is. But I love that. Yeah.
Let's go out on something. I love that. I was talking about John Congleton before, and the idea that you can identify a song, and just that is what you music writers want to do in your life. You want to make that song, and this is one of them. Thank you, everybody. This is fun. Listen to Massive Attack, of course. Thank you, Susan. Thank you, Amelia. Thank you, James. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Berkeley.